were now at a time when the brothers, their mother, the Pandava brothers, had been virtually exiled to the northern town of the Kurus, of the Kuru nation. And there Duryodhana had tried to burn them alive, but they'd escaped. No one knew they'd escaped. And now, in effect, they were on the run. And during that period, they were guided by Vyasa to a Brahmin's house, and they stayed there for some time. And then, after a while, again with the help of Vyasa, they joined the crowds of people who were literally flocking to the wedding, to the Swayamvara, the bridegroom choice of Draupadi. Draupadi, the daughter of King Drupada, remember she was born from the centre of the altar of the holy fire where her brother had first been born at the same time of Drishtadyumna. They were still disguised as Brahmin, and they joined a caravan of Brahmins who invited them to join them, and they took their time. It was some days' travel to get there, but they were in no hurry. They leisurely went along, and they camped by the beautiful rivers and woodlands on the way there until they came to the capital city of South Panchala. Remember, the Panchala had been divided. Drona had actually conquered North Panchala, which abutted the Kuru nation, and they were now heading to South Panchala. The wedding was to take place in this city of Kampilya on the northeastern side of the city. It was flat, the land had been consecrated, and an enormous great big wall had been built round an arena, and outside that wall was a moat. And all around the perimeter, stands had been erected. And there were large gateways that led in from the city into the arena area, and there were pavilions, or multi-story pavilions, beautifully put together, and they were connected one to another with trellises, gilded trellises, and within that gilding and within the trellises were embedded precious stones and mosaics and so forth. There were large areas set aside by all the visitors, not only the townsfolk, but the country folk and the country folk of other lands and nations nearby. And of course, the various kings had been given the floors, various floors within the pavilions, and areas had been set aside for the Brahmins and again, for, as I say, the villagers and the townsfolk and so forth. There was a certain sort of slow build-up of people coming in, and it was really, really like a big fair. There were actors, there were bards, dancers, reciters, wrestlers, musicians, and constantly in the background could be heard the roar of kettle drums, the playing of lutes and flutes and cymbals and so forth. A really very jolly, noisy affair. You could say that the kings were strutting about in their Sunday best. They really put their best regalia on with their jewels and ornaments and garlands. In fact, anybody who was anybody was there. And let's see, you'd recognise some of them. There was Duryodhana there with all, not all his brothers, but a lot of the brothers. Karna was there, of course, and Shakuni came with him. Rather surprisingly, maybe, Ashwatthama, Drona's son, was there. Virata was there, remember, he was with his two sons. He was the king that they stayed with the last year incognito, the Pandavas did, when they were exiled. And there was Uncle Salya, and with the visionary crowd came, headed by Krishna, Balarama, and Satyaki, and a whole lot of others. But if it was pretty heavy on the ground, it was even more so, really, in the sky above, where the gods had come in their chariots. There were the seers, the Gandavas, you know, the semi-deities. There were the birds, of course, the Asuras, Siddhas, and the snake semi-deities, the snakes, the Charanas, and so on. In fact, the pathways in the higher levels were pretty clogged with all this lot. And, of course, it was a very sweet smell of sandalwood and aloe, with lots of bunting and flowers and garlands and so on. Now, in spite of the fact that it was the Pandavas, and particularly Bhima and Arjuna, who were the architects of the capture of King Drupada for Drona, and the land was lost to Drona, that North Panchala, King Drupada had always had his eye on the Pandavas, particularly Arjuna, to wed his daughter. And what he did to try and, if you like, filter out all the others who would obviously want her hand as well, he had built a very strong, out of very strong hardwood, a bow. And he put it out that the feat that the person had to achieve, who was going to have the hand in marriage of Tripadi, would have to take the bow, string it, take 5 arrows, and through a connivance, a holding machine, he had to fire the 5 arrows through the hole and to a target beyond, and the hole was moving all the time. All the time, the audience, those spectators, were growing, and on the 16th day, Draupadi came out holding the champion's goblet, lovely, beautiful tooled golden goblet, and she walked around the arena, and just after her came the priest, priest to King Drupada, and he spread holy grass, probably kusa grass, around the area, and he offered ghee, butter, into the holy fire, and carried out all these things in the proper manner. The Pandava brothers, of course, had arrived a bit earlier, and they settled with their mother in the area set aside for the Brahmins. And after a short while, the brother, Drishtadyumna, came forward and he called for silence. He came to the centre of the pit, the lower part of the arena, and explained the setup. But first, he read out all the names and all the kings and all those contending for Draupadi's hand. Then the kings came forward and in line and one by one attempted this task. And one by one, they totally failed. In fact, you could say, as a discreet spectator, it was a bit of a comedy show. You see, what they had to do, not only was a pretty heavy bow, they had to lift the bow, then they had to string it. So they had to compress it, rather like compressing a spring. They had to bend it so that they could loop the string from the lower horn of the bow and loop it over the other end. But they just hadn't got the strength to get anywhere near to actually bending the bow to get to slip the string over it. And the sort of thing that happened was they'd bend the bow, they hadn't the strength to hang on, and suddenly it would shoot forward and it shot them on the ground, or it pushed them over, or it jumped away from them. So you had all these rather pompous, I'm sure not all of them were, kings who suddenly found, instead of the boastful strutting around that they had been doing, here they were rolling in the dust. And of course, there's nothing like a little bit of humiliation to damp the ardour of these suitors. When all the kings had tried their hand, totally failed, there was a bit of abuse coming from the crowd. You know, the townsfolk and the country folk had come to see a good show, and who's going to win the hand of the most beautiful Draupadi, and none of them were any good at all. So there was a fair bit of abuse going on. And while this was happening, then Arjuna got up in his Brahma's disguise. In fact, just before that, you know, Krishna had turned to Balarama, and he'd been looking quite hard at the brothers, and he said, Aren't those our cousins? And it's quite, you know, Balarama, in a sort of casual way, he slowly turned and looked. Anyway, nothing more was said at that stage. So when Arjuna got up, there was really quite a roar from the Brahmins. They thought it was great that one of theirs was actually going to challenge the Kshatriyas, all these rather proud, cocky ones, and they all started waving their deerskins around and cheering, but not all of them. Quite a segment of them, took the opposite view. They said, well, who is this cocky young fellow who's coming up to challenge all these kings? If we fail, if he makes a muck of it and really does something and look pretty stupid, it will reflect on us. They'll actually look down upon us. But others then said, well, no, look at him. Look at his muscles. Look how well built he is. Give him a chance. He could well do it. Anyway, Arjuna went forward, and with great humility, he put his hands together, walked round the bow and bowed to the bow, snatched the bow and quickly strung it. Having done that, he took the 5 arrows and very quickly shot these through the device, through the hole, the moving target, and down came the far target. Well, there was uproar, as you can imagine. The Brahmins were jumping around, leaping around, all cheering and what have you. And from above, too, the gods were cheering. And down came the flowers and garlands and things like that. But, of course, the kings weren't at all happy. and they started muttering, who was this Trapada to invite them to this enormous sumptuous place just to embarrass them and humiliate them? They ought to deal with him. We'll chuck her, that's Draupadi, onto the holy fire, and then we'll get at him. So they started putting their gauntlets on and getting their weapons together. But meanwhile, the garland had been given by Draupadi to Arjuna. And of course, actually, King Draupada was pretty pleased. But when he heard this breakout of the irate kings, he started pretty swiftly nipping round and taking cover and protection amongst the Brahmins. And at that time, I mean, it's a bit like a bar fight. At that time, Yudhishthira could see that it was turning into this sort of bar fight. Anyway, he decided to take his mother out of it before they found themselves in trouble. So he actually and the twins, Nakula Sahadeva, started to go back to where they were staying at the potter's cottage. Well, things are getting pretty rough, because you see, you had on one hand a whole bunch of kings coming forward shouting and cursing with their arms and things like that. So in fact, Bhima and Arjuna step forward to hold them back. Immediately Arjuna with his sword and his bow and things, and Bhima also came forward and grabbed a nearby tree, as he often does, and hoiked it up, ripped off the leaves, and was standing there in front of the advancing kings. Well, I'm sorry, I'll have to leave you, my time's up at this standoff point, and we'll see how it went next time. If you have been, thanks for listening.